Chapter 36. Teresa. The day Teresa finally broke began like most days now, with a nightmare. She had been awake until the small hours of the morning, watching old movies and entertainment feeds that she'd seen before, trying to squeeze comfort out of them because they were familiar. Knowing what was going to happen before it happened made the stories feel very safe, not at all like her real life. She stayed awake as long as her body would let her, and when she could stay awake not one moment longer, the dreams came for her all at once, like they'd been waiting for her, like they were hungry. There were three main varieties. In the first, she was in a strange part of the state building, and her father, or sometimes her mother, was in a room nearby being killed, and she could stop it if she found the right doorway. In another, the planet Laconia had gotten a disease of some kind, and bits of the land had started falling down deep into the burning core. Nothing was stable, and nothing was safe. The third was formless and violent, less a dream than variations on Illich's murder of Timothy. Each version came regularly enough that she'd begun to recognize them. The dreams had even started commenting on it. As some new terror reared its head, she'd think, "It's just like in my dreams, only now it's really happening." It made the nightmares worse because it made them feel inevitable. Her waking hours were poisoned by them. The violence and fear and loss could spill out at any moment, from any place, and nothing could be relied upon. It was terrible because it was true. She woke after not enough sleep to the gentle tapping of a servant and muskrat's excited bark. Breakfast was a favorite meal for the old dog. Maybe every meal was. The servant brought in a white ceramic tray with a plate of eggs and sweet rice, a glass of watermelon juice, and a sausage with the dark, grainy mustard that she liked. Or that she had liked. Food wasn't something that interested her now. Not the way it used to. She stirred the sweet rice and watched the official news feeds talking breathlessly about the Laconian ships offering assistance to local governments in the ongoing fight against separatist violence. Images of men and women in Laconian formal blues talking seriously with the governors of Earth and Mars. She wondered if anyone believed that. She wondered whether she had. She knew that if she didn't eat, her failure would be reported to Trejo. It had happened before. She took a bite of egg, but the rubbery texture of the white made her gag. The rice would be enough. It had to be. She hadn't been able to get more than half of her dinner down the night before. She knew that starving wasn't good for her, and that Illich and Trejo wouldn't like it. That was part of why she did it. She took a spoonful of the rice, sucked away the thick, sweet sauce, and spat out the grains. On her screen, Admiral Gujarat was talking about the completion of the Whirlwind, the newest Magnetar-class ship, as if it weren't the only one, as if the first two weren't already dead. She picked the sausage up. The smell of grease and salt was repulsive. She couldn't see it as anything but a slurry of dead animals in a thin membrane. She tossed it to Muskrat. Instead of wolfing it down, her dog looked from the scrap to her and back again and whined. "You might as well," Teresa said. "I wasn't going to eat it before. I'm certainly not going to now." Muskrat swung her wide tail twice, uncertainly. She ate the sausage with something that looked like shame. Teresa's numbness slid away for a moment, and tears came to her eyes. The state building was filled with people from every system in the Empire. She had people whose only duty was to cook her food, to educate her, to see that her clothes were cleaned and put away. Nobody had the job of actually caring about her. The only one who even noticed her was a dog. A voice spoke in the back of her head, as clear as if there had been someone in the room. It sounded like her own, but calmer, drier, somehow more adult than she thought of herself, like some later Teresa, sending a stray observation back through time. Muskrat likes Holden. The voice didn't go on. Teresa looked down at Muskrat's complicated brown eyes, and the sorrow lost its edge. You may have shitty taste in friends, she said. Sorry, dog. Another tap came at her door, and she didn't need to open it to know it was Illich. She stirred her food to make it look like she'd eaten more than she had and let the door open. As soon as he saw her, his smile faltered. I know, she said before he even spoke. It's very important that we maintain the image that everything is normal. You tell me that every day. She stood up and put her arms out to the side. This is normal. I'm normal. Of course, he said with a practiced smile that meant he just wasn't going to fight her. Your peer class is going to start soon. Dr. Okoye is going to be leading it today so that I can meet with Admiral Trejo. So that I can do something more important, he meant. Even if he didn't say the words, Teresa heard them. Muskrat huffed and wagged her tail, anticipating the adventure of leaving her rooms. Teresa shrugged and walked toward the door, daring Illich not to step aside. He stepped aside. The state building was the same as it had ever been. The archways, the colonnades, the gardens, nothing about it had changed. It was her home and her kingdom, and somehow they'd made it into her cell. Illich and all the others, too. She was honored and revered and treated with total deference if she did what she was told, when she was told. Her opinion was listened to with seriousness and gravity, and then ignored. She stalked toward the lecture room, wondering what would happen if she marched in, took the microphone, and shouted, "My father is brain dead and nothing is all right." It was enough to make her smile. As it turned out, though, the fantasy wouldn't have worked. The lecture room had been rearranged for the day. 6 slate-topped tables stood in rows of 3. The other students, her so-called peers, were already there. Apparently Illich had come because she'd run late and hadn't noticed. The room stank of something deep and caustic. Air recyclers were set up in all the windows, scrubbing whatever the volatiles were out and blowing fresh air back in. Small trays sat on each table, 2 each, with a variety of scalpels, tweezers, pins, and thin scissors laid out between them. Elvie Okoye was walking among the students, leaning on her cane and chatting as she went. Teresa felt her anger shift again. She was supposed to be fixing Teresa's father, not teaching classes to a bunch of kids. But, of course, Teresa wasn't allowed to say that, because that wouldn't look normal. "Good to see you, Teresa," Elvie said and touched her hand. "I'm glad you're here." Teresa shrugged and moved away, leaning against one of the tables. Now that she was close, she could see the bodies spread out in the trays and held down with pins, dead animals, dead as Timothy, dead as her mother, dead as all the people in the ring space. "So today, Colonel Illich wanted me to, give you all a little introduction to parallel evolution. So what we have here are 2 different species from 2 different trees of life. One of them is native to Laconia, and the other one's from Earth. They're both called frogs because they fill the same ecological niche and because they have some similarities in anatomy. So, yeah, get in groups of 3, I guess, and I'll walk you through the dissections." Teresa looked at the frogs. They both had pale bellies and darker skin, though the one she recognized was considerably darker. The rear legs folded differently, and one had 2 forelimbs to the other's 4. From where she was standing, the thing they had most in common was that they were dead. She took a scalpel between her fingers, considering the blade, and wondered whether she'd be able to cut the bodies open without vomiting. The upside was she didn't have much in her belly to puke up, so that was fine. "Hey," Connor said. She hadn't seen him come up, but here he was, sandy hair and soft eyes. She remembered caring what his opinion was. She remembered wanting to kiss him like it was in a film she'd watched, and not something she'd felt herself. She pinched the flat of the blade between her fingers and held the handle out to him. "Want to cut?" she asked. He took it and looked away, uncomfortable. That was fine. Sean Ellison made up the third of their group. When all the rest had formed up, Elvi Okoye opened a volumetric display with an image of two idealized frogs to match the ones on their trays. "Okay," Elvi said. "So one of the things that we see in both Laconia and Earth biomes is water. And there are animals that have found an advantage to living part of their lives in the water and part out. We call them amphibians. Both of your frogs are amphibians. And because water is chemically identical in both worlds, and the adult forms that we have here need to breathe air, there are some problems they both faced as they evolved. Some solutions look very similar, and some of their strategies could not have been more different. So let's start with looking at the Earth frog's lungs. Each team should make the first incision right here." Slowly, step by step, they began unmaking the frogs. Despite herself, Teresa found the process interesting. The way the Laconian frog cycled water in and out of its chest cavity to do the work that the Earth frog did with the diaphragm. The way the feeding mechanisms, mouth and esophagus for the Earth frog, chambered mouth and gut for the Laconian, served the same functions in different ways. She felt like it was all telling her something deeper than just biology. Something about herself and the people around her. Something about whether she could ever belong. She realized she had been drifting off when Connor spoke to her again. His voice was quiet and tentative. "My mom." Teresa glanced up at Elvi. She was across the room talking to one of the other groups. "What about her?" Teresa asked. "I was just saying that my mom, she's, you know, she watches the news feeds with everything that's going on." He glanced at her, and then away like he was shy, like he was saying something shameful. Sean Ellison didn't speak, but watched with the intensity of someone expecting violence. It felt illicit and strange, like he'd said the first part of some password and she didn't know the rest. Then, a heartbeat later, she did. He was asking her to tell him something reassuring. His parents were scared. He was scared. And because they were in peer class together, and she was her father's daughter, he wanted her to tell him that everything was going to be all right. That she, knowing what she knew, wasn't afraid, and that he shouldn't be either. She licked her lips and waited to see what would come out of them. "She shouldn't spend too much time on them," Teresa said. "I know everything looks really scary, but it's not that big a problem. Dad has the best minds in the Empire working for him, and they're learning more every day. Everyone always knew there'd be setbacks." "Yeah," Connor said. "Everyone knew." So she'd lied. That was interesting. She'd told him what he wanted to hear, and it wasn't even because she wanted to protect him or keep him safe. It was just easier. She understood now why adults lied to children. It wasn't love, it was exhaustion. And she was like them now. They'd eaten her. "Are you okay?" Sean asked, and it seemed like her voice was closer than she was. Like the girl wasn't talking from across the table, but whispering into Teresa's ear. It sounded soft and weirdly intimate. "I'm fine," Teresa said. Only the words didn't come out. She had the sense that she needed to leave now, that if she could get a drink of water and lie down for a minute, her breath wouldn't seem so loud in her ears. She felt herself walking. At the door, someone's arm appeared beside her, startling her. It was her own. She moved the hand, fascinated by her control of it, married with the absolute emotional certainty that it wasn't her arm. Elvie Okoye was there too, like something from a dream. She said something, asked something, but before Teresa could answer, she'd forgotten what it was. "I wonder if I'm dying," Teresa thought. And the idea wasn't unpleasant. For a while, Teresa lost herself. A flurry of sensory impressions, voices, movement. Someone was touching her hands and her neck. A bright light shone in her eyes. When she came back, she was lying down. The room was familiar, but until she heard voices she knew, she couldn't quite place it. "I'm not drawing any conclusions," the doctor said. It wasn't Dr. Cortázar. It was her old pediatrician, Dr. Klein, and he was talking to Elvie Okoye. "What I'm saying is she's dehydrated and malnourished. Maybe she got that way because there's some kind of uptake problem. Maybe she's had an allergic reaction to something, or her stress levels are so high she's somatizing. Or, and I'm just saying maybe here, she's been starving herself." She was in the state building's medical wing, on a gurney. There was a line connecting an autodoc to a vein at the back of her hand. When she shifted, she could feel the needle under her skin and the coolness in her arm where it was feeding fluid into her. "I skipped breakfast," Teresa yelled, and her voice sounded normal again. "It's my fault. It was stupid. I just lost track of time." They were at her side before she finished speaking. Dr. Klein was a youngish man with wavy brown hair and green eyes that reminded her of Trejo. She liked him because he'd given her sweets after her checkups when she was young, and because he'd never condescended to her. Now he was looking at the system readout from the autodoc and trying not to meet her eyes. Elvie, leaning on her cane, was ashen. She looked directly into Teresa's eyes, and Teresa stared back. "It was the frogs," Teresa lied. "It came easily. Between not eating first and cutting them up, I got lightheaded." "Maybe," Klein said. "But if there is an underlying gastrointestinal issue, we should get on it quickly. There's some microbial life on Laconia that we're seeing fungal model infections with. It's not something to take lightly." "It's not what's going on, I promise," Teresa said. And then, "Could I talk to Dr. Okoye for a minute?" There was a moment's hesitation that she couldn't quite read, like Klein might refuse, but then, "Of course." He nodded to Elvie. "Major," he said, and walked away. When he was out of earshot, Teresa whispered, her voice harsh, "What are you doing bringing him into this? We're not supposed to be around other people. Dr. Cortázar is my doctor." "He's not a physician," Elvie said. "His doctorate's in nanoinformatics. He shouldn't be practicing medicine any more than I should." "But he knows what's going on. Do you want Dr. Klein asking around about why I'm under so much stress? You want him to figure it out?" There was a joy to throwing all the things they'd said to her back at them, a delight in seeing Elvie flinch. She watched the woman struggle with something and then reach a decision. Elvie sat on the end of the gurney, sighing as she took the weight off her leg. She rubbed her hand across her forehead. "Listen," she said, "I'm not supposed to tell you this, but you cannot trust Dr. Cortázar. I'm almost positive he intends to hurt you, maybe kill you. Then, a moment later, probably kill you." She felt a wave of vertigo, and the autodoc threw up a warning. It was just that she was hungry, that she needed water, that was all. Teresa shook her head.
Why?
Elvie took a deep breath and spoke softly. I think to give a well-known subject to the repair drones and see what they do. He has two others. But he didn't have the kind of scans and prep work that he has with you. That and... he wants what you and your father were going to have. He wants to live forever, too. Like the frogs, Teresa thought, and fought back cruel, despairing laughter. He wants to treat me just like the frogs. Nature eats babies all the time. Holden had known, too. He'd tried to tell her. That was two different people who'd warned her. Two different people who'd discovered the same thing. Elvie was holding her hand, the one that didn't have a needle in it. I've been trying to keep him away from you, Elvie said, but Cortázar's very important. Without him, your father's recovery gets a lot harder. Everything gets a lot harder. We have to tell Trejo, Teresa said. He knows, Elvie said, her voice dark. I told him. We're doing what we can. But you should know, too. You should protect yourself. How? Elvie started to say something, stopped, started again. There were tears in her eyes, but her voice was steady. I don't know. I'm in over my head here. Yeah, Teresa said. Me too.